Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument is Sunstar. Mr. Leach.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Brian Leach, and I represent the appellants cross appellees in this case. The case arises out of a contract dispute over Sunstar's use of a modernized VO5 logo on its women's hair care products in Japan. The 1980 agreements gave Sunstar a Senyo Shioken license, and the parties agree that this term has a fixed meaning under Japanese trademark law. They disagree about what that meaning is. Alberto Culver asserts that Senyo Shioken licensees have a certain set of rights, and Sunstar argues that they have a broader set of rights. But the district court, instead of deciding who was right and who was wrong about the legal meaning of this legal term in the contract, made a fundamental error. In September of 2003, the district court held that the term was ambiguous because it had a disputed meaning. And because the term was ambiguous, it held that it was not going to try to ascertain its actual legal meaning, and it was not going to tell the jury the actual import of the rights associated with having a Senyo Shioken license. It's little wonder, then, that at the very beginning of the deliberations, the jury sent a note and asked to know, quote, what exclusive rights does Sunstar have as a Senyo Shioken licensee? Please be explicit. The district court gave no answer to this question, and that prevented it from evaluating Sunstar's claims in defense of the breach of contract action in this case. And we are here seeking one of two remedies. Either we're asking this court to decide the Japanese trademark law issue as a matter of law and then remand for an evaluation or an application of that law to the facts to determine whether this disputed logo is within or without the scope of Sunstar's rights, or...
Why does anybody care? I don't understand. Why do they care about the exact appearance of the trademark?
By they, Your Honor.
The parties. Why do you...
Well, Sunstar, it's very important to Sunstar, Your Honor. This is a $100 million line of business, and this is a modernized logo that they've reached the decision is the best logo to promote their product within the Japanese marketplace. Alberto Culver objects because they argue that it is infringing their...
But why wouldn't they permit you to do that if it's really better for the Japanese market? I don't understand.
I don't either, Your Honor. I think that's a good question, and our argument...
Well, they want to be paid, right? What, they want $10 million or something?
Your Honor, we paid them $10 million.
Well, they'll probably want another $10 million. Huh.
Well, that's right. In the past, what's happened is the parties have had these disputes. Alberto Culver has tried to interfere with the rights that Sunstar has, and then they've extracted a concession or a further payment.
Well, what's different from this than that dispute in 1989 that was settled? Same type of argument, isn't it?
Your Honor, that dispute it was similar in the sense it involved another VO5 logo, mm-hmm. and the parties decided that it made sense to just resolve it for business reasons. But we think that had we actually pressed our rights in that case in an action, we would have been found to be entitled to use the 1989 mark. And the whole point of this action was for Sunstar to get a declaratory judgment so that it would no longer have to justify introducing VO5 logos in the Japanese market. From a pragmatic standpoint, what went on here is Sunstar negotiated and bought the rights for 99 years to use these VO5 logos. They introduced these marks because you can't use a static set of logos from the 1970s all the way for 99 years. And they would slightly modify and update these marks. And then what would happen would be Alberto Culver would interfere and argue that they weren't allowed to do that, and it got to be a hassle. And so they brought this case to try to have a declaration that it was entitled to use the marks that it made sense in its own business judgment. And to Judge Posner's earlier question, you know, Sunstar is the only manufacturer of VO5 products in Japan. There are no other manufacturers in Japan under the contract. So there's no risk that by putting out this logo, some consumer is going to be confused about who made this shampoo product or this hair care product.
These logos don't look all that different to me. I don't know.
Right. Exactly.
Now, you manufacture the product, but is it some Does Alberto Culver have an interest in the product or just in the trademark?
No, Your Honor. Alberto Culver has no interest in the product.
You make the product.
Correct. We are the sole makers of all of these products in Japan. And there is no argument that this somehow harms the Japanese trademarks.
They must have some supervisory role, right? Well, you can't license your trademark without controlling quality and so on. So there must be some specifications for what you can produce.
Your Honor, there are no specifications about the products. There is control, to your question, about the use of the trademarks, which is the role of the trustee in the 1980 agreements and the framework. And it's the trustee's responsibility to make sure, for instance, that Sunstar
quality
doesn't
control. So let me ask you this. So you're really saying that this Shenyo Seokan licensee has the rights of an owner. Isn't that your basic argument?
That's right, Your Honor.
But then why, if that's true, why was Alberto Culver so emphatic about refusing to sell the trademark to you, which is what you wanted?
Because, Your Honor, it wanted to ensure that Sunstar would not export these products outside of Japan. And it wanted a third party to oversee that obligation and make sure that we did not. And there's been no dispute. We have never done so in the 29 years of this arrangement. Now, I would just elaborate on your point about the ownership rights. There are four rights that a Senyo Shiokan licensee has under Japanese trademark law. Three of them are totally undisputed by the parties, and we're only disputing the fourth. And let me just briefly tell you what they are. Number one, the right to exclude the owner. So the license is so powerful that the owner cannot use the trademark within that geographic space while the licensee is using it. Number two, the right to bring suits against third parties who are infringing. The licensee has that right, as long as it's a registered licensee. Number three, the right to maintain the registration through the use of variations of the logo depicted in the trademark application. So the law encourages licensees and owners to do that, and that's not disputed. We're here.
What was this? It's not disputed. I'm sorry.
It's not disputed that when someone brings a cancellation action seeking to cancel a trademark registration in Japan, that if you have used a slight variation of the logo depicted in the trademark application,
right.
You have defeated that motion for cancellation and you have managed to actively preserve your trademark rights. And that is true whether you are the owner or the registered licensee. Now, the fourth right, which is where all the action is, the fourth right is the right to use those same variations in the same manner that an owner would use them.
And our I thought your fellow Doi, is that his name?
Mr. Doi, Professor Doi, yes.
So I thought he argued that the third embraced the fourth or implied the fourth, or he relied on the third for the fourth, right?
In That's correct, John.
Affidavit, yeah.
That is correct. And the argument is Japanese law treats owners and registered licensees one way, and it treats third parties another way. So a variation that might be an infringement if it were used by a third party is not an infringement if it's used by the owner or by the registered exclusive licensee. And we can see that, for example, in the Continental case, which is a case cited by Mr. Doi, a 1978 case in Japan, which says there was an action for cancellation brought. The licensee used a variation that was adequate to maintain the registration. Now, in that case, there was also a third party who used a variation. That third party's use was referred to as an infringing act. But we don't think it makes sense to read Japanese trademark law to suggest that it encourages someone, a licensee, to use variations for the purpose of maintaining the registration.
Is that the continuing argument or the continuous? A variation can be appropriate for continuous?
Precisely, Your Honor. That is exactly how to understand the continuous use obligation. If you look at Section 3 of the trust agreement, it said we have to maintain the trademark registrations. And you can do that through using marks that are not just 100% identical to the marks that are identified in the application.
What's the criterion for permitted variation?
The criteria, Your Honor,
could you say VO4?
I think not, Your Honor. I think that the criteria are set forth in, for instance, the Japanese Patent Office guidelines. You would look there. You would look to the language of the Japanese Trademark Act, especially Article 50, and you would look to Japanese case law, especially the language of the cases cited.
Well, what's the rule in U.S. trademark law?
With regard to the use of variations?
Variance, yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. What
now,
I know.
Don't you have a waiver or forfeiture or law of the case or some sort of problem? Because you didn't make these arguments initially, right?
By these arguments, are you referring to the Senyo Shiokan arguments?
Right, right.
Well, Your Honor, it's true that the 1999 correspondence, the letters, do not contain the phrase Senyo Shiokan. But the 1980 agreements all contain the phrase, and those are what dictate the rights that have been conveyed in this case. And throughout this litigation, we've argued, beginning in 5 years before the trial, in April 2002, we've argued that Senyo Shiokan is part of understanding the scope of our rights. And both parties went to the court and asked the court and said, we'd like you to construe this legal term that appears in this contract. And both parties told the court in no uncertain terms that it was for the court to decide. And where this case went off the rails is at Sunstar Appendix 268 to 270. And that is the September 2003 ruling of the
district
court.
But you didn't request an instruction, right?
Your Honor.
You would want to have an instruction that told the jury what Senyo Shiokan meant. And then they would decide whether, you know, was satisfied.
That is correct, Your Honor, and I would just make 2 points in response. Number one, we did propose a jury instruction. It's at Sunstar Appendix, Joint Supplemental Appendix 847, and also, again, at Joint Supplemental Appendix 1009. We did so in February of 2004. We did so in April of 2006. Our instruction would have said, quote, the Senyo Shiokan term conveyed, quote, the full range of trademark use rights, including the right to use a certain range of variations of the originally filed trademark design that is provided for under Japanese trademark law, to which Alberto Culver objected at Joint Supplemental Appendix 851, quote, that the instruction was improper because, quote, it tried to say what the Japanese law is in a, quote, misleadingly objective way. So we did what we could within the confines of the law of the case. Now, I should say that the jury instructions were proposed after this critical ruling in September of 2003, where the district court had held the term is ambiguous because the parties disagree about what it means, and so I'm not going to instruct the jury. I'm not going to decide what Japanese law means. The actual meaning is irrelevant, and that is where this case fundamentally...
Well, that's the notion that the parties attach their own meaning to... What does the word Senyo Shiokan mean?
Literally. It translates to exclusive license. But neither party, critically, Judge Posner.
No, I'm just curious. Sure. So, well, what about their argument that whatever the legal meaning of the term, the parties presumably could vary it, you know, and they could attach their own meaning. Isn't that their main argument?
That is their argument, Your Honor. And the problem with that argument is twofold. And most importantly, I don't think that's proper as a matter of contract interpretation. Where there is a legal term incorporated into a contract, you don't inquire into what the party's private understandings of that legal term's meaning might be. The court construes that legal term. And that is certainly so where the term is not ambiguous. Unless the term is ambiguous, it is the court's responsibility to roll up its sleeves and answer that question. And there was no ambiguity here. The parties aren't arguing that this term has two possible meanings under Japanese law. It has one fixed meaning, and they disagree about that meaning.
I'm going to go back to this dispute in 1989,
sure.
Which looks to me like the same type of dispute, that you wanted to make some variation in the trademark. Was the argument pushed at that time by you that this Senyo Shiokan interpretation gave you the right to do what you wanted to do?
We used a different argument, Your Honor. We did not use the phrase Senyo Shiokan in 1989. What we did was we pointed to a different provision of the Basic Sale Agreement, which is Basic Sale Agreement Section 9.3, and we said that section entitled us to use variations. We weren't allowed to register variations, but we were allowed to use them without the permission of Alberto, and we said that expressly in that letter in 1989. And so that our argument now relates to that. It's a more nuanced explanation, excuse me, Your Honor, of that argument. But if you look at Sunstar Appendix 82, you can see Basic Sale Agreement 9.3, and that's cited up and down in our papers.
See, the problem I have is, maybe it's a simplistic way of looking at it, is that you had a dispute. This is a 1980 agreement. You had a dispute in 1989. That is the same dispute that you're having today. And in 1989, you paid $10 million to end the squabble and move forward. So why is it, isn't that the position that you're sort of stuck with here?
Two reasons. Number one, that was a totally different mark. And number two,
But it was just a little, it was a variation.
It was another variation. Yeah. And we also, that agreement was not just a settlement agreement. We never conceded that they were right. It was a settlement. But beyond that, it was also, that $10 million was as part of a much larger license and know-how agreement where we got access to all kinds of proprietary information and new formulas and that sort of thing. So it was a business resolution that had a lot more to do with that, as much to do with that, rather, as it did with the dispute over the trademark. I would reserve the balance of my time with permission.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Leach. Mr. Folkler?
Good morning, Your Honor. Craig Folkler. I represent Alberto Culver Company, and I'm also presenting for J.P. Morgan Chase N.A., the trustee.
So what is your interest? I mean, they presumably have a better idea of what kind of trademark will be alluring to Japanese, so this must be just want some money from them.
Well, Your Honor, there's always the
possibility. I mean, you have no interest in, as long as they're forbidden to export from Japan, you don't have any interest in their use of this variant.
Actually, Your Honor, Alberto did
do
have
you?
An interest.
What is it?
It had the reversionary interest. This was a license. This wasn't a sale. And if the license was violated.
Well, that was for 99 years, or?
It was a license.
Pardon?
It was for 99 years.
I have no interest. Culver has no interest in what happens in 90 years. That's ridiculous.
Well,
what's the present value of $1 billion in 90 years?
I'm not
right?
sure what that is, Your Honor. But I know that when you have a reversionary interest in a trademark that's otherwise a global trademark used by Alberto Culver throughout the world, you have an interest in assuring that that mark maintains value and a certain reputation in Japan. And under the agreement didn't allow for variations because there were specified marks that Alberto had decided should be used. Those included marks that include the term Alberto. When we talk about the licensed marks in this case, some were just VO5 and some were Alberto.
But you're earning money from this license, right? Every year, don't you? Or did you sell it for a flat sum?
It was licensed.
You don't get any royalties from their sales in Japan?
No royalties, Your Honor, from the sales in Japan, no. But the interest was to make sure that the marks that were licensed, in which Alberto had the reversionary interest, weren't damaged, and that they continued to be used. If those marks had stopped being used...
Weren't damaged? What does that mean?
Well, if there are other marks which Alberto didn't agree conveyed the right image, or, as I mentioned, the Alberto VO5, they dropped Alberto, which...
But you have no interest in the Japanese market anymore, right? You have no sales there.
No, but if Alberto would, there were other terms in that license that it could be terminated for.
Is that the big thing, is that the word Alberto is taken out?
Yeah, very big thing.
But a lot of it is just a changing of the... of the design of how the V and the O and the 5 appear.
Well, those are some differences in some of the licensed trademarks, Your Honor. However, when this deal was being negotiated between Mr. Kaneda, the president of Sunstar, and Mr. Lavin, the president of Alberto Culver, Mr. Kaneda said, I'd like to drop the Alberto from some of these, from the marks that have it. And Mr. Lavin refused. That's the reason all the detail and specification went into the license.
Well, does Alberto Culver sell other products under its name in Japan?
It has. I don't know if it currently does.
Well, if it doesn't, why would it care whether the word Alberto appeared in the trademark?
Well, when I say I don't know if it currently does, I'm talking about what I think is a brief moment in time. I know they have at other times had Alberto marks.
I mean, it sounds to me as if you're just trying to extract some millions of dollars from them. You have no real interest in what they call this product.
Well, Your Honor, they do have a real interest.
But now also, first of all, I'm always puzzled in these cases. Why do lawyers arguing about foreign law. Why do they hire a lawyer to give an affidavit? Why don't they look in a book somewhere to see what the law of Japan is? It just seems so phony. Expert witnesses paid to say what you ask them to say. I don't understand it.
Actually, I agree. If you read the Act, I think that there's two terms here.
Well, there must be treatises about trademark law in Japan, right? So why aren't the treatises cited rather than having a lawyer's affidavit? But in any event, your opponent's expert, Doi, he made this strong argument that you can keep a trademark alive over this period of year, to satisfy the continuous use requirement of Japanese law with a variant.
Your Honor,
isn't that correct?
If I may, actually, I think Mr. Doi's testimony, and by the way, Mr. Doi was a witness they dropped before trial. They weren't going to have him testify at trial after his deposition. Mr. Doi testified that in the cancellation section, 50(1), of the Trademark Act, which is not the Senyo Shioken section, but 50(1) is what Sensar keeps talking about, that there was a provision that certain variations would be treated as use of the registered mark.
Right.
However, 50(1) expressly states that that allowance of the use of variations as the registration is specifically limited to that purpose, only for cancellation proceedings. You're right. You don't have to be a Japanese lawyer. It states it. That it's only for 50(1) for cancellation proceedings, which rules out its use as part of Article 32, which defines Senyo Shioken. The Senyo Shioken provision is very clear. It states that the licensee only gets what's expressly stated in the license. Here, what was stated in the license was a very careful definition of licensed trademarks. And those licensed trademarks were even depicted, sometimes a little bit roughly. So it's quite two different things.
When you say definition, what was this, a verbal definition or a picture?
Both. Well, the verbal was in terms of the marks in the registration, shown in the registration. And then they had pictures of what marks were shown in the registration. The other problem with 50(1),
is registration in Japan or the United States?
Japanese, Your Honor. The other problem with 50(1), if I may, 50(1), the section they're relying on, can be used by a non-exclusive licensee, an exclusive licensee who doesn't register it. It can be used by anybody. So it has no particular connection to a Senyo Shoken licensee. It's for anything. And like I said, it specifically limits itself to cancellations expressly. So I agree with you.
What does it say when you say limits expressly?
50(1), the section they rely on to say that Senyo Shoken includes variations, the language in it that talks about variations says that definition of a registered mark is limited to cancel the Article 50(1) cancellation proceedings.
I have two questions. First, does Alberta Culver market or license VO5 in other countries such as China, Taiwan, South Korea?
I'm not sure you are.
Well, the reason I ask that is because are you concerned that they will take this mark too far from its core,
yes, sir,
variation, whereby they could then export?
No, it's not. The concern isn't about...
Because it would not be clearly identified as VO5 if it varies too much, and then they might get around the export limitation. Obviously, if they can do $100 million in Japan... Why not China and some of the other countries that have a market?
No, Alberta Culver has sufficient rights globally that if there were to be an export, even of a variation, or even a more drastic, a very drastic
variation. A violation, more than a variation, I guess.
Yeah, it would violate the rights in the
so
other
countries. That's not a motive for trying to keep it confined.
No, the motive for trying to keep it confined...
Confined to where it doesn't vary without approval or only approve variations.
It's the image of the mark. And, there were instances where Sunstar came to Alberta and said, we want to use a variation. And Alberta did agree because they thought it was consistent with what they thought the licensed marks were that they had a reversionary interest in. In 1996, for instance, Sunstar sent over a variation and said, we want to, actually a new mark, said, we want to use this. Now, Alberto said, well, it doesn't have Alberto on it, so we're not going to approve it. If you put Alberto on it, we will approve it. That demonstrates Alberto's ongoing interest in maintaining the Alberto V05 portion of the marks, which was, you know, a key element of the negotiations between Mr. Kaneda and Mr. Lavin back in 1980. And it's also, if we look at it, when you look at the continuous use provision, the specificity as to the terms of the agreement about what the license marks were, the provisions that if they didn't continue, which is plain English language, continuous use, it comes back to Alberto. And Alberto gets it back. This is a real interest that they had.
On page 9 of Sunstar's brief, they have a picture of the trademark design, the registered trademark design, and the 1999 modernized logo.
Yes, sir.
Neither of them say Alberto.
That's right, Your Honor, and that's one of the registered trademark designs, only one out of 13.
Well, so they could have used that without the Alberto.
Well, Your Honor, no. That's the point. This wasn't a licensed trademark. I mean, this wasn't a mark that was set out. The 99 mark was not a mark set out, and I don't think anybody disputes it, in the appendices as one of the licensed trademarks.
No, he's pointing the one on the left.
The one on the left. Registered.
That,
but it doesn't say Alberto.
Well, no, there were some that said Alberto and some didn't.
Look, I don't get this case. You don't do business in Japan. You can't do business there. You can't do business with your... with this VO5 for 99 years or whatever, 99 years from 1989, whatever it was. You don't get any royalties. You don't have any interest in what they do in Japan. There's no way in which they can hurt you by using these variants. This is just extortion. You just want another $10
million. No,
how can they possibly harm Alberto Culver by using these variants?
Well, I think the 99 mark's a great example, Your Honor.
The what mark?
The 99 mark, the one at issue here, is
right.
A great example.
Right.
As I kept mentioning, Alberto Culver is a global company. The fact that it might not be marketing in Japan at the moment, it has in the past for many, many years, different times.
Well, it sure didn't want to market VO5 there because it gave this incredibly long-lived license, which is the equivalent of a sale.
Well,
99 years?
Well, Your Honor,
that's a sale.
When there's default provisions and reversion. But anyway, the point is that the Alberto portion is important also. It does have an interest in getting these back.
But that's the point. Why, on page 9 of Sunstar's brief, it says registered trademark design, and it doesn't say Alberto. It just says VO5, and then on the right-hand side, 99, says VO5. Neither of them say Alberto. I can see the argument that you have to say Alberto, but if it was permissible for them to use the logo on the left of that page, but not on the right, I don't understand it.
Actually, it was required that they use both the logo on the left and logos with Alberto. The 99 mark replaced everything. I mean, it replaced
Wait
all
a second. You're saying every one of their products has to have the name Alberto on it?
No, but some do.
What do you mean some do?
Well,
some of their products have to have Alberto and
Alberto
some...
Alberto V05, those licensed trademarks.
No, but do they have to put an Alberto, a trademark that has the word Alberto on some of their products? Is that part of the contract?
Yes. Because the contract requires continuous use of all of the licensed trademarks, and a number of those licensed trademarks include the word Alberto.
Well, of course, that's another strange thing. They have 30 trademarks, and they have to use them all continuously?
No, actually, there's 30 registrations.
That doesn't make any sense.
13 trademarks.
13 trademarks. They have to use all 13 all the time?
Well, yes, Your Honor, and there's a wide variety of products they sold, both men's and women's products. And I think the record shows that most of the time over the years, this is what the joint venture was using before they entered into the 1980 agreements, and Sunstar constantly used a wide variety of marks anyway. Now, the idea to switch to the 99 mark, drop the licensed trademarks, including the ones with Alberto, that was a change. But that historically is not what they did. I mean, marketing in Japan isn't like marketing in the U.S., honestly. There's a lot
Why
more
not?
Variety in the packaging, number of products out there. I think that they put in exhibits at trial which show what they currently did, and they went on to adopt even additional VO5 marks that weren't authorized by the license agreement after the suspension and after the case started. You have a lot of different packaging, more so than for a brand in Japan than you do in the U.S.
On page 11, I guess it's supplementary appendix 53 of the blue brief, you have about four of them. One is has that little V-shaped thing with Alberto VO5, and then one just above it just says, which is the same symbol except it's just VO5. Now, when you talk, are those, this is on page supplemental 53, supplemental appendix. It's probably in a lot of other places, too.
Okay,
this
yeah.
just happens to be the one I opened up to.
Yeah.
Apparently, you have no control over the formula or anything else. They manufacture it. Is that right?
It may be a completely different product over there. No, actually, that's really not accurate, because under the terms of the license, Sunstar was prohibited from doing anything that was going to harm the value of the marks, okay? And Judge Posner asked about, in comparing to U.S. trademark law, whether you need quality control. And the whole purpose is to maintain the reputation of the marks, the quality of the products underneath. In the U.S., it's a requirement. By prohibiting Sunstar from taking any action that would have harmed the value of the marks, in effect, there was a provision which required that the quality of the products be maintained. And if it had turned out that they were putting out products that were of a bad quality, that were damaging the value of the marks in that way, that the marks were becoming less valuable because they were becoming associated with poor products, that was a breach of the license agreement with the terms.
Mm. So your argument is that if they didn't use all 13 trademarks continuously, the whole license
Absolutely
is canceled?
Not. No.
What
no,
happened?
Not at all. No. The license was very specific, the agreements together. If they stopped using one of the marks, the license was terminated as to that one particular mark.
Right.
And it came back to Alberto Culver.
Yes, but look. Yes. But they could cancel all the marks that say Alberto. And then the word Alberto would not appear on any of the VO5s in Japan.
No, actually, the registrations would come back to Alberto.
Well, you're not going to go, but what? And then you're going to go and you're going to sell a competing product called Alberto?
Actually, Alberto would have had that option.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know why it's ridiculous, because that's the whole purpose of having the termination clause.
But it would cause confusion in Japan.
No,
you have two different manufacturers.
No, Your Honor, no. Legal confusion doesn't occur.
What?
Legal confusion.
Legal confusion. What on earth does that mean?
confusion that is considered to be infringement.
Nonsense phrase, legal confusion?
Well, Your Honor,
what are you talking about?
Well, Your Honor, actually, I agree with you. I think that it is nonsense to talk
about. Well, why do you use it, then?
No, I was going to say it's nonsense for the parties, for them to have talked about there's no confusion because all the products, both the 99 and the license mark products, came from the same source. As a legal matter, it's used by the same party. It's a legal fiction. Consumers might think when there's two licensees point out a product, they might, quote, be confused factually into believing the same companies are actually making those two licensed products. Okay? That's not, as a matter of law, though, actionable confusion. If, however, the two individual parties who are using the marks are not authorized, they're not connected, then there is, when I said legal confusion, it's likely to a confusion that's actionable under the trademark laws. And the same would be true there, here. Yeah.
Now, I don't understand your cross-appeal at all. You want an injunction against them, against their infringing?
Your Honor, we want an injunction that, first of all, yes, is part of it. That's part of it. But we want an injunction that expressly states that they cannot use marks that incorporate VO and 5, such as just now going and using Sunstar VO5. The way we read the injunction, It does not prohibit them from simply turning around and using Sunstar V05 and requiring Alberto to then bring an infringement action.
But why do you need an if we affirm the decision? Well, I don't know, why would you need an injunction? I don't understand.
Well, Sunstar has blown through the suspension, totally ignored it. They've adopted new V05 marks since this case started. There aren't licensed trademarks. They show absolutely no intention of recognizing that their use of unauthorized marks violates the rights under the registered marks. So we think that they...
So you didn't win anything with your judgment? What do you think you won?
Well, Your Honor, what
did you
we
win
won?
Anything?
Well, the first step is we've gotten the marks back, the registrations. Right. Now it's a matter of enforcing them. If we have the judgment with the injunction, that really helped completes the relief. Not only do we have it
back. That's the next suit. Once you have your, if you get your trademark back and they continue selling, they're infringing and you can sue them. I don't...
Well, Your Honor, just to answer your question, I think that's one of the purposes of the injunction. Whenever we have, for instance, like in a trademark case, is you don't want to make things so narrow that we're just going to turn around and almost be guaranteed another lawsuit. In most cases, there's no reason to think that the defendant will, in fact, the infringer, continue to infringe. Of course, in this case, we know that they've been a flagrant violator of the injunction. They continue to add other marks, so there's good reason to think that they will continue to infringe. And so I think the economy of the court, and I think there's substantial precedent that it's prudent.
What are the damages then?
No, there's no monetary damages.
What I mean, first of all, how do you enforce the injunction? And secondly, where will be damages if they continue to use it?
Well, if the injunction covers what they're doing, it would be a contempt action here. And without the injunction, it would necessarily be an infringement action in Japan.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Folkler. Mr. Leach? So, Mr. Leach, it is true, Article 51 does say, for purposes of this article, the trademark includes its variants.
Yes, Your Honor. It does not say for purposes of this article exclusively. It does say for purposes of this article. And I think it's important to go back to Professor Doy's opinion. His argument is it makes no sense to say that you are legally encouraged to use a mark that is infringing. And as a matter of background principles that predate the codification in the Japanese Trademark Act, that was never the case. It was never the case under Japanese case law. I would also point the court to Article 27, which is a very important article. It refers to the scope of the registered trademark. It's a joint supplemental appendix 666. And it says the scope of the trademark is based on the design in the application. That makes no sense if you're only allowed to use the exact logo in the application. Now, I want to correct
I'm sorry, say that again, the scope of the
sure.
What?
The exact quotation, Your Honor, at Joint Supplemental Appendix 666 is, the scope of the registered trademark shall be determined based on the trademark submitted as part of the application. Their argument is you can only use the trademark submitted as part of the application. Our argument is no, you can use that logo or minor variations of the logo submitted as part of the application. Now, I do want to correct two very important misstatements of the record. Number one, this notion that you have to say Alberto or it's an infringement. I would encourage the court to look at reply brief, page 45. There are 12 V05 designs set forth there. Those are all licensed. 9 of them do not say the word Alberto, 9 of them. So this notion that we had to use Alberto, I think, is misguided. It's also the case that there was never, if you want to talk about the letters, Your Honor, there was never any objection about the fact that we didn't use Alberto. That wasn't the gravamen of their complaint, of their argument in the trustees' letters. There are many marks around the world used that do not have the word Alberto in them in all sorts of different countries, and those were explored at trial. And one of the key themes that Sunstar pursued was they got a witness on the stand and asked him, aren't these all used, variations used, and some of them don't have Alberto? And the witness said, yes. And they said, have you ever raised any stink about that? And the witness said, no. So I think that's a misnomer, and you need to look no further than the actual appendices for that. I also want to touch on this notion that we're in violation of the injunction and subject to contempt. The injunction has been stayed. The injunction has been stayed pending appeal. Are we still using the marks? Yes, because the injunction has been stayed. So that's an important point. I would also point out that this is an entirely baseless allegation that there are new marks that violate the agreements. They've never written us a letter that said that. The first time I ever heard that allegation was in the papers in this case. So there's been no finding in the record to that effect. That is the proper subject for another lawsuit, as Judge Posner said, if in fact they feel that way. So I just wanted to clear those two points up.
If you lose this case and if the injunction then kicks in, as issued by Judge Cooper, hard to see why Sunstar VO5 wouldn't be covered.
I agree completely.
But the injunction is too narrow if it doesn't cover it, Mark,
We've never disputed that,
okay,
Your Honor. We've never disputed that if the injunction is upheld, we couldn't keep using VO5 as a logo. We don't dispute that part. We don't think the cross appeal has any merit because we think that the issue, the injunction is adequate if we're wrong on the arguments we bring on the main appeal.
The Senyo Shioken, it's not permitted to, you can't register marks, can he?
You can register as a licensee.
A licensee can register?
Yes, you can. And in fact, there's a key point, one last point, Your Honor. Opposing counsel said, well, anybody can avail themselves of Article 50. That's not true. A mere contractual licensee cannot. You have to register with the JPO. And now there are two types of registered licensees. There's a Senyo Shioken licensee, which is a registered exclusive licensee. And there's a Sujo Shioken licensee, which is a non-exclusive but registered licensee. And if you look at Article 50, what it says is either type of registered licensee is entitled to these provisions. But the parties, when they negotiated, the distinction they drew was between a mere contractual licensee, exclusive, and a registered exclusive licensee. And it's the act of registering the license that gives you the powers that allows you to have those ownership-like powers. Thank you, Your Honor.
So, wait. Is there anything in the record about other products sold by Alberto Culver in Japan?
No, Your Honor. To my knowledge, the record shows that Alberto Culver has abided by the restriction contained in the basic sale agreement. I believe it's Section 7. That sets forth that they shall not produce or import any products using the VO5 brand or the Alberto VO5 brand in Japan. And they've stayed out of the Japanese market entirely, and we've stayed out of all markets but Japan.
Do they make anything else?
Not to my knowledge, not in Japan, not to my knowledge. There used to be a joint venture, and what happened was they said, we don't want any part of this Japanese market, so let Sunstar run the Japanese market, and we'll extract our $10 million and be happy.
Why were they so adamant against selling Sunstar trademarks? Because Sunstar wanted to buy them very much. And this Senyo Shioken seems a lot like sale as a practical matter. So why was that a sticking point that's given rise to this litigation?
I think that's a good question. I think the answer, Your Honor, is the export restrictions. And what happened was, just to be totally clear about exactly the order of operations, they agreed on a sale. They agreed in principle on a sale. And then what happened was, at the 11th hour, Alberto Culver came back and said, we need a greater insurance that you're not going to export outside of Japan. And they said, we want to use this license and this trust structure, but we'll make it 99 years, and it'll be, for all intents and purposes, like a sale. I mean, they said that. They said to our negotiator, this is like a sale, and he proceeded on the assumption that these freedoms that Sunstar would have to use its marks would be no different than under the sale. And they, on that understanding, they created this trust and license arrangement, and they put in very strict, very firm export restrictions, and they appointed this neutral third party to oversee those, and Sunstar has always complied with those export restrictions. And, you know, that was one of the purposes behind not having an outright sale, having mm-hmm. that leash. And frankly, another purpose is the ability to extract the kinds of rents that they have by interfering with business decisions that Sunstar has made since the advent of the 1980 agreements. And this is just the latest instantiation of that problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel for a very interesting argument.
Thank you.
And we will move on.